Shalom, today, the 21st of Adar, the year 5777, corresponding to the 19th of March of the year 2017. And we continue now with our studies in Mishneh Shabbat in the beginning of chapter 8, following on from the previous chapter, which started with a digression into all of the 39 forbidden labors of the Shabbat, but then returned to what has actually been the subject of most of the tractate until now, the subject of carrying in and out from one domain to the other, from the home to the street, from the public domain to the private domain, or vice versa. And as the second half of chapter 7, the Mishnah had came to its really intended point. The digression about the 39 labors came after we'd heard about what animals may go out with on the Shabbat and what men and women may go out with on the Shabbat. And the Mishnah, because it wanted to learn Mishnahs 3 and 4 of chapter 7, the klal of the Shabbat, the rule of carrying on the Shabbat, what constitutes a minimum quantity of carrying in each case of all kinds of different things. Now in chapter 8, we continue with the Mishnah's very specific listing of what items carry what minimal quantity if they are carried out in from one domain to another on the Shabbat, making a person liable for the transgression of the Shabbat. In other words, here again, we are dealing with the concept of the melacha, the labor of hotza'ah, carrying out, which is the slenderest of all the labors, the one involving probably the least effort of all, carrying a pin out from inside the house to outside the house. What is it people think? But it's actually one of the prohibitions of the Shabbat to carry out from the private domain to the public domain or vice versa, but the carrying has to be malacha machashevet. It has to be malacha, a labor that is machashevet, with an aspect of mind and thought in it, an intentional act of labor. So what constitutes carrying out something as opposed to just a piece of fluff or a piece of dust or a piece of sawdust, what constitutes actually a carrying varies from item to item. And the continuing very specific measures given in this chapter, and then after another little digression in the following chapter, these give us a fascinating insight into the world of the Mishnah. The world of the Mishnah is a kind of ideal world where people behave as people are supposed to behave. And one of the things that people in the ideal world of the Mishnah observe is the prohibition of bal tashchis, the needless destruction of food and other useful items for human beings. Bal tashchis, do not destroy wantonly. This is in our modern prosperous world, one of the most violated of all of the prohibitions of the Torah, to wantonly waste all kinds of things, to this throwaway world that we live in. And one of the things we may learn from the coming very beautiful section of our Mishnah discussing the different measure in the case of each item is how very conservative people were, how very you might say, environmentally conscious, that they would want to preserve things. These were not fat, over-prosperous people. These were people, an agrarian society, living on their farms and laboring day by day and involved in all the different aspects of life. So beginning now in Perek Ches, Mishnah Aleph, chapter 8, the first Mishnah, Hamotzi Yayin, suppose somebody carries out wine from the house into the street on the Shabbat, how little would they have to carry out to already be liable to just a spot of wine is not going to help anybody. So the measure is, according to the Mishnah, kedei mezigas hakos, in order to pour out the cup. Our Mishnah is telling us that, indicating that the wine in the times of the Mishnah was very strong and full of flavor in those days, to the point that it would be treated much the way that people today treat syrups and concentrates of different kinds of flavorings, the most terrible concoctions of orange and pineapple and other flavors with heaven knows what additives and color ingredients. But for them, the wine was this very thick syrup, which you'd fill up a quarter of the cup of the Kiddush on Friday night, or the Havdalah, or the cup of the Birkat HaMazon when blessing the grace after meals, over a cup. And the minimum quantity of a course is in Hebrew called a Revi'it Alog. It is a quarter of a log. And the amount of wine that would be needed to make a full Revi'it will be just a quarter of a Revi'it at the bottom. You then add pure water from the land of Israel to make a full cup. And so if a person took out a minimum of wine of this quantity on the Shabbat, they would all be liable to a sin offering. It was done unwittingly. Now, had they taken out a smaller quantity than that with their own specific purpose in mind, that would come into the category of what we learned in the third Mishnah, that if there is a particular individual, the third Mishnah of the previous chapter, the chapter 7, Mishnah 3, we learned that if a person had a particular intention in what is carrying out, even though this may not be everybody's intention, then for that person, if he carries out that smaller quantity, that is already prohibited. But for a regular person taking out wine, for a regular person, it would be this minimal quantity. Chalav, if it was milk, kedei gemio, enough to for a person to gulp down some milk. Divash, kedei litein al akosis, if it's honey, in order to put on the kosis. The kosis, according to some interpreters, is a wound on the outer skin of a horse or a donkey through the constant friction of the saddle or the items that the animal is carrying, and the kosis would be a place that was inflamed because of this friction. And Dvash, honey, organic honey of ancient times, was, as is known to people who pursue alternative medicine today, natural honey is indeed a wonderful curative. And there is another interpretation of the kosis, that it could also be a boil of a human that is forming a head. And indeed, in natural medicine, it's known that the application of honey to a boil has the power to draw out the pus from underneath. Shemen gedelosuch eiver koton. If it was oil the person was carrying out, well, oil is a very precious commodity, and enough if the person was simply anointing the smallest limb of a child, namely the little toe, that's already a meaningful quantity of oil to be taken out from domain to domain. That constitutes the forbidden labor of hotza'ah. Mayim k'deloshuf bohem es hakilor. Water, sufficient quantity to saturate with them the kilog, which is a salve for the eye, a curative salve which was known in antiquity both to the Jews of Israel and also in other places of the Mediterranean. And this salve, if you took enough water simply to lubricate the kilog, that would be a quantity of water, that clean water, that would make the person liable to the chatos, sin offering, if done intentionally on the Shabbat. Usha'or kol hamashkin birvius. All other mashkin, all other beverages reveals the quantity that we heard earlier in relation to the wine. When we talk about the wine, it's enough wine to constitute a quarter of the total reveals. The reveals, the quarter log of the Mishnah, is about a nice wine cupful. So any other beverage also, the reveals is considered to be the quantity of liquid that constitutes a drink for a person. Anything less is not called a real salve of thirst. V'chol ha-shifochin b'revius. And also all of the waste water that's got to be poured out, b'revius, the measure would be a revius. Now this has practical implications in a place where a person has dirty water in their house. They cannot directly throw the water out into the public domain from the house. So this has applications in the halacha. What they may do is pour the water into their yard, and if the water later flows out to the street, that is not considered to be a violation of the prohibition of carrying on the Shabbat. Well, now Rabbi Shimon comes in and takes issue with all of the previous Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Omer Kulon Brevius. Rabbi Shimon says all of the above liquors that we've been speaking about, including the wine and the milk and the honey, all the person would only be liable if they carried out a minimal quantity of a Brevius. And the above measures, in the view of Rabbi Shimon, are for somebody who put the specific substance aside for himself for that specific purpose. Rabbi Shimon does not hold by the general rule that we learned in chapter 7, Mishnah 3, that when a person puts anything away for their own use, be it even less than the measures we've learned so far and shall be learning, if they put less than that, for that person there will be a liability for carrying out that small quantity. Rabbi Shimon holds that even if a person takes out a minimal quantity of something, there has to be some minimal quantity. You can't just say, well, even if he only took out a drop, that he's already liable. The basic liability would always be a revius, a quarter log cupful of any of the above liquids. V'loy amru kol ha-shiurin halalu, and they, the previous sages, did not say all of these measures, Elo lematzni ehen, except for the specific people who are putting these things away for their own specific use, but not in a regular case. Continuing now with the second Mishnah of chapter 8. Hamoitzi chevel, somebody who takes out a piece of string. Kedi lasois oizen lekupo, in order to make a handle for a basket. The chevel is a kind of coarse cross between what we call rope and string that would be useful for this purpose. Gemi kedei la'asuis talai lenofo. A gemi, if a person takes out a reed. A reed has the function in this very minimal society of serving as a temporary piece of string. Kedei la'asuis talai lenofo, it could serve as a hook for the nofo, for the sieve, for the flour. But the kevora, nofo and kevora are two kinds of sieve. One is a coarser one, one is a finer one. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer, kedei litol mimenu midas minol lekoton. Rabbi Judah says, no, the minimal measure of the gemi, of the reed, would be to use it to take the measure of a child's foot before the parent goes out to the shoemaker to make a shoe for the child. He doesn't have a tape measure, so he takes a piece of reed and he says, I need it this long for the child. Nior, kedei lichtov olov kesher moichsin. The word nior in contemporary Hebrew refers to paper, and the Mishnek nior was papyrus. Nior, a piece of papyrus, how small could it be to make the person liable to the prohibition of carrying out on the Shabbos from domain to domain? Nior, papyrus, kedei lichtov olov kesher michsin. In order to write upon it, literally, the knot of the mochsin, of the customs collectors. The Hebrew word meches refers to the customs of a country or a region, and the kesher mochsin, the knot or the seal of the customs officers would be a receipt they would give to a person if he had paid customs already on an item in one place to show the people in the other customs office that he's already paid his dues on this item. So this is the kesher mochsin, a small receipt, probably having a couple of letters written on the papyrus. The hamoitzi kesher mochsin chayav. Likewise, if a person were to take out an actual kesher mochsin, the actual receipt of the customs officer. In the previous section, we were referring to a piece of paper, a slip of paper, a notelet that would be big enough to put on it the receipt of the customs officer. Here, we're talking about an actual receipt of the customs officer. He'd also be liable if one carried that out on the Shabbat. Nior mochuk, if it is nior papyrus, that is machuk, that has been blotted out, that they've washed off the first generation of what was written on it, that can no longer be used for a serious document in antiquity. You don't write a document over something that's been blotted out because you have no idea, maybe the previous document was blotted out and that was the real one and somebody forged it. So it has to be writable on. Nior machuk, if it was a slip of paper that had been blotted, what can you do with this? Kedei lichroch al pi tzoloichis ketano shel paliotoin. Sufficient to bind around the mouth of a little jar of some perfume to preserve the fragrant odor. Now continuing on to Mishnah Gimel, the third Mishnah, or Gedelasos Komea, a slip of parchment, sufficient if it were enough to make a Komea, an amulet that would be carried for protective purposes, not an actual amulet. We already heard about the amulet earlier on, but here sufficient to write upon it a piece of parchment, that or refers to untreated leather. Klof, this is the real parchment. Klof is worked leather. It's called klof parchment because the actual skin of the animal is peeled apart. There is a skin that is closer to the flesh and a skin that is closer to the skin. So the peeling process produces the klaf, the choice parchment on which scrolls of Torah and tefillin and mezuzah are written. If a person carried out as much as a piece of the klaf parchment, kedei lichtov olov porosho ktano shebat tefillin, if it were even enough to write the very short with small letters portion of the tefillin, the head tefillin, where the four portions are each written separately in the four cubicles of the so-called phylacteries of the Jew, Shehi Shema Yisrael, the shortest of the four portions, is the actual Shema portion from Deuteronomy. And that's a fairly small slip of parchment. If anybody's seen actually unrolled the parchment portions in the tefillin, the Shema is the shortest of all of them. Dio, if a person carries out some ink, then sufficient if they carried out ink to write two letters. Dio kedei lichtov shtei oisios, ink sufficient to write two letters. Kechol kedei lichol ayin achas. The kechol is the blue. It's a cosmetic for the eyes, and if the person carried out the kechol, the eye shadow, sufficient if they carried out enough of it to darken one of the eyes. The reason why it's enough for one is because the modest girls of antiquity were going out with their head almost entirely covered, and only one eye would be visible, so that was the only eye that they would actually apply the kechol darkener to.